Blog Talk Radio.
Gentlemen, and welcome to the backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and today is Wednesday, September 1st. Wow, I cannot even believe we're heading towards, you know what, Christmas. You know that old saying, Christmas in September, Christmas in July. I mean, before you know it, we'll be seeing all sorts of decorations going up. Anyway, I want to welcome you to the backyard, and for the people who don't know what we do here, we are engaged in labrish. And for the people who don't know what a labrish is when Jamaicans of like mind get together for a chat, a talk, not necessarily a gossip, but perhaps a story, and that's what we do here in the backyard. Backyard Labrish is dedicated to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And, oh boy, do I love that land. And I always describe myself as a senior, and I am just very passionate about history. And I'm always seeking stories that I didn't know before, especially as it relates to Jamaica, its culture, its people. And I have been doing the show perhaps for about 2.5 years now, or almost that. And each story to me is just so precious because most times it's things I didn't have a clue about before. So I'm hoping that my listening audience will enjoy our shows, will come by and lavish with us, and a labrish is to participate in. So if at any time while you're on the board or online, I think I do have a co-host tonight that you can open up the chat room with and, you know, send questions or comments. But if you would like to interact with me and become part of the labrish, the number you call is 1-718-766-4558. And because most of the people that come on board to listen, whether now or later on when they do have time, are people living all over the world, but perhaps they love Jamaica in one way or another. They've visited, they have parents that are Jamaicans or Jamaicans themselves, and especially those that migrated to another country perhaps before independence. I am one of them, and I'm always excited to discover something I never knew before I left or since I left. So tonight we have a fish story, but it's really a true fish story, not one of the usual ones that fishermen tell about the big catch, but this is such an unusual fish story. And it's brought to us by, or brought to light by Dr. Rebecca Tortello, who contributes to the Pieces of the Past, which is available online through the Jamaica Gleaner Company, which is an old establishment that every Jamaican knows. And if you haven't really browsed that site, I would recommend that you do it. I am trying to bring a lot of the stories live because I know a lot of us, especially seniors, are not that comfortable with going online and searching and reading. Some of us have problems with reading it online. So I try to get stories that I can talk about, relate to, and share with you. So I do hope you will enjoy tonight's story. And I'm going to be reading from Dr. Tortello's article, but I'm also very good at sidebars, even though I'm not an attorney. But I like to put in my own little two cents as the story come alive. And again, I would invite my listeners, if you want to put in your little two cents, just hit one on your telephone, and I will see, I do see the numbers, I will see a raised hand, and that will tell me that you want to talk, and I will open the microphone and welcome you to the backyard. So I'm hoping I'll get a lot of participation this evening. So here we go with Dr. Tortello's Shark Papers story. Now, over 200 years ago, the Jamaican Court of Vice Admiralty, whatever that is, heard what is surely, they mean the court of law, heard what is surely one of the strangest cases ever to come before a judge in a classic example of the old adage, truth is stranger than fiction. How often do we hear that? Now, on September 9th in 1799, a suit for salvage involving a shark, papers, and a prize captured in the Caribbean Sea by a British warship was brought before the court at the southwest corner of Harbor and Hanover Streets. And I'm sure the Kingstonians know where that was. Now, filed by the Advocate General George Crawford Ricketts on behalf of Hugh Wiley, commander of the Sparrow. Now remember these names because this is such a cute, well, an unusual story. So we have Wiley, commander of the Sparrow, and his crew against a vessel called the Nancy and her crew. Now the story sounds simple and straightforward, but as with many such stories, it was anything but. At the time, Britain was at war with France. The Netherlands and Spain and the Caribbean was teeming with conflict. This story began in July of 1979 when the Nancy set sail for Baltimore, Maryland, for some Dutch island, Dutch West Indian island. Now, part of a firm that traded regularly between Baltimore and Haiti, it was not the first time that Nancy had made this trip. She carried her usual cargo of German goods and was scheduled to stop in Haiti on the homeward leg to pick up coffee. Now, let's talk about the voyage. Captained by Thomas Briggs, an American, the voyage went well until changes in wind and current caused him to put in at Aruba, 50 miles from Curacao. That's where he was supposed to be going, I suppose. Many ships often use bad weather as an excuse to veer off course and in neutral ports, such as Aruba. Ships could clear cargo intended for prohibited ports and find anything from arms to false papers. So Briggs went on to Curacao, and met up with his vessel, accompanied by an agent of the firm who is said to have inspected the Nancy and found everything in order. Now, en route for Port-au-Prince, Briggs was again the victim of bad weather and was forced to put in at a small island south of Haiti to refit his damaged main topmast. You know, in those days, they sailed with these big masts. Anyway, the Nancy was never to reach Haiti, as soon after she was sighted by Commander Wiley of the British cutter, the Sparrow, who suspiciously suspected that the ship was carrying contraband. He immediately called a warning and gave chase. Now, knowing the Nancy was no match for the speed of the Sparrow, I suppose that's why it was named that, Briggs went below deck and surfaced with a sense of inevitability. He knew he was going to be doomed. His ship was sealed, his papers collected, and all were remanded to Port Royal. It was August of that year. So, you know, this Sparrow captured the Nancy. They sealed the ship and put it in Port Royal. So that's the voyage. And I hope my listeners can follow. Now, in September, the British commander, Wiley, brought suit against Briggs. Now, remember, he was the one that his ship wasn't fast enough. And Briggs brought a suit against him. So it was counted. They were doing those things from those days. You know, one person sue another person, they counter sue. Well, I am learning so much how much the past is similar to the now. I mean, I'm always very surprised. Now, Briggs, he's the one with the slow ship, seemed to have the upper hand and was clearly on the way to being acquitted as no evidence existed. Remember, the other one thought he was carrying contraband. But the ship was sealed and put to port. So he was very cocky. He didn't have anything to be worried about. So he filed a claim for dismissal with cost. Now, Briggs seemed to have the upper hand and was clearly on the way to being acquitted as no evidence existed to convict him of smuggling when suddenly, just before the final decision was taken, a ship known as the Ferret, these are interesting names, arrived in Kingston with important information pertaining to the case. Now, this is the case of the shark. This is where it gets interesting. Now, that ship that came into port, the Ferret, that was commanded by a FITTON, Fitton. And the British commander, Wiley, he's the one with the fire ship, had met on the high seas near Haiti the same August while both were seeking to earn their share of prizes using warship to capture goods from enemy vessels. Now, on 2 days after Wiley had captured Briggs and the Nancy, while waiting for Wiley to join him on board his brig, the Ferret, for breakfast, a strange object, still being eaten by sharks, was seen floating by. It turned out to be a dead bullock, and Fritton, that is the name of the captain, hoping to catch an unusually large shark seen swimming near it, ordered the bullock to be taken in tow along his ship. Now, he managed to outwit the shark because, you know, what the shark was chasing, he got it following his ship. He outwitted the shark, and it was soon hoisted on deck. So he got this shark that was chasing this other fish. And what happens next is so mysterious. And I am going to tell you in a minute. Just let me change my papers here. Now, while cleaning the giant fish, the crew came across a bundle of papers tied with a string. Now, Fritton glanced through them a bit astonished. His astonishment grew as he recognized a paper with a recent date from Curacao. Am I pronouncing that right? If my famous English critic is online, please let me know. Anyway, the papers were from a ship called the Nancy. To Fritton, that meant it was perhaps a recent prize captured in the same Caribbean waters. Now, he first ordered the papers separated and left to dry. Why he returned to breakfast with his friend? Oh, I see a raised hand. Listeners, bear with me. 718-379. Good evening and welcome to the backyard.
Oh, well, this is Leigh from New York.
Home of the Bronx. Who? Home of who?
The Bronx. Home of the New York Yankees.
All right. Excuse me, sir. Welcome to the fish story.
Thank you. All I wanted to say was you asked about a word. It's Curacao.
Curacao. Okay.
Yeah.
I got it. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's go on with the story. We're going to draw swords in a minute.
In a minute. This is so,
okay, all right.
So cool. Okay.
Bye.
So we're up to where he ordered the papers to dry, and he returned to breakfast with this man, you know, the other captain from the ship. Now, and he said the breakfast with the Mr. Wiley, looking forward to sharing his good fish story, because here he was, he caught this hell of a big fish. So he was looking forward to share the story with him. Now, during their conversation, he learned of Wiley's good fortune of capturing the Nancy a few days earlier. Stunned, Fritton explained, "But I think I have her papers." Wiley was shocked. He said, "No, I sealed the ship. That is impossible. I have the papers." This is so funny. So Fritton simply stood up and said to Wiley, "Follow me." So they went to where the shark was being dried out. And there was the real papers. So it turned out that accidentally there was this shark that swallowed the papers that the first captain, you know, that in the slow ship, was trying to hide. He threw it overboard. I'm sure he didn't see the shark. So when he was captured by the fast ship and his ship was sealed, the papers, the real papers, were already overboard. He didn't worry. So this suit and countersuit went on in Kingston. And it was, I don't know if it's during, it would seem like during the time that it was to come to a decision, that this, the same captain that was involved was in having breakfast with somebody else who had picked up the shark. Only to find that he now had the original papers that proved that the slow ship was really smuggling. But he was so sure there was no evidence against him that he was quite cocky in court. So can you imagine his surprise when the papers were produced from the belly of the shark? Now, what is the chance of that happening in open waters off of the coast of Haiti? I'm sure it was in shallow waters. And how many sharks were swimming around then? Isn't that wild? Hello? Are you still there?
We're in the wild.
I admit, but the whole idea why it is so interesting is, first of all, I don't know if you remember the nursery rhyme, but what is this? Oh, speak the truth and truth, speak it ever, cost it what it will. He who hides the wrong he did does the wrong thing still. That's number one. Number two, you know what I remember? What is feel calm beyond feel. Have you ever heard that one?
No.
You've never heard that one?
No.
Well, I am just saying that the captain with the fire ship was, I suppose, ordained to have those real papers, you know, because at that time now he gets everything, the ship, everything on the ship. You know, it was who get the biggest prize, because that's what they were trying to do. Plus, the other man had a charge filed against him for perjury, and he lost his ship. Because whereas he thought he was safe, because he got rid of the papers. So when the ship's papers were unsealed, it wasn't there to prove anything. And this man was just having breakfast with this other man who caught the shark. Now, a biblical thing come into mind, which is, I don't know if that's a nursery rhyme too, but what is done in the darkness will always come into light. And I wonder who can think of others. Because there's so much lessons in all of these old stories. And, of course, whether they deal with Jamaica or Jamaicans are not. The principle remains the same regardless of where you are. And I just, you know, we think of things that happen in the past as so really mostly unrelated to now. But every story that I read, I can find so many nuggets of wisdom that really speak to us as human beings. And speak to the principles of the universe that, you know, you never know. But the truth will always prevail in most cases. But I thought, and incidentally, let me just share with the listeners a couple of footnotes about this story, because it was in the documentation in Kingston for quite a long time. I'm trying to get my thing here on it. But it is quite famous. It says, now, during the earthquake of 1907, the shark papers disappeared first of all, let me tell you about where they were displayed. The shark papers, as they came to be known, were kept in the archives of the court in Kingston until 1890. When they were put on display at the Institute of Jamaica. For a while, the shark's jaws were on display near the courthouse at the corner of Harbor and Hanover Streets as a reminder that honesty is the best policy. That was the purpose of the display, I suppose. They were later sent to the Royal United Service Museum in London, but are now at the Institute. They're back in Jamaica. So, Leigh, have you ever been to the Institute in Jamaica?
Yes, I have.
Well, do you remember seeing the shark papers and the jaw of the shark?
No. It's possible as a youngster I may have seen it, but, you know, I didn't dwell on the whole story as related by you, and it wasn't a significant event.
Like everything else, when we're young, well, I know I wasn't interested in the history that I learned then because it seemed quite boring.
Do you remember at the Institute a huge snake?
No,
I
you
mean,
know what I
really
remember
huge.
The Institute watching Charlie Chaplin movies.
No, just a real snake.
No, I don't remember the snake. Sorry.
Well, I was most interested in seeing that snake every time I go there.
And what was the story? What is the snake story?
There's no snore the story that I know of, but I guess it was, you know, they didn't have a real zoo, and this was the institute, so they kept this snake there, but I've never in life seen a snake this large.
Oh, but and apparently that was caught in Jamaica if it was there.
Could
and
be.
The snakes got extinct because of the mangoes, right?
Yeah, I wish I knew the story about that snake now that, you know, we're looking at all these different things.
Well, perhaps that's something that we need to investigate now that we're so interested in history.
Yeah.
But let me just tell you another note that is on the Pieces of the Past, Dr. Tortella's article. It says, during the earthquake of 1907, the Schaff papers disappeared for a short time. They
Again?
Were found in the hands of a looter who could not account for how they came into his possession and who soon returned them to the Institute of Jamaica. Here's another point. You know how a lot of people always are so surprised that there's looting after a tragedy, right? Whether it's a hurricane or a fire, whatever. But this has been going on for so long. Because when there's an opportunity, I suppose, to get something that don't belong to people or to get something for free, they go for it. Right?
Yeah.
So because, I'm sorry, you remember we did a show on the earthquake of 1907 in Kingston.
Right.
And there was a lot of looting going on there, or in Port Royal. It didn't say whether this was the Kingston earthquake or the Port Royal earthquake. But I remember some very luscious stories about the earthquake in Port Royal when we did that show. But, you know, in every one of these stories, there are things that we can relate to now that is still happening.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that. Whenever there is a disaster, a lot of times it's followed by looting. But at least he, apparently whoever the looter was, it didn't say he was punished or whatever, but he knew the significance of this particular story, because I am sure that that is so almost unbelievable that this ship could be sailing along in the sea, throw away something that they want to hide, but he attached a string to it. I don't know what that was for, if he perhaps intended to go fish for it after or something. And here is another ship, not the ship that was chasing him and caught him, but another one going about his business, saw this big shark chasing another fish, and decide, this is a prize for me. I need to get this fish. And there, out of the clear blue sky, is the papers that that other one was trying to get rid of. So, to me, that is why it's such a famous story. Because it almost seem unreal.
Like
that
a bun.
That it could happen, you know, in that sequence.
Yeah.
So, I want to invite listeners on the board to chime in, as we would say, you know, and put your hand up so you can participate in our little Labrish this evening. I want to remind our listeners that you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We are here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock, and we try to find interesting stories that relates to Jamaica. We can celebrate, enlighten, and preserve our rich history. And tonight we are getting a little enlightenment about something that happened a long time ago, but that me personally, we can relate to it now. Because a lot of time, as the adage say, truth is stranger than fiction. Nobody could make up a story like this. I can just imagine this in a movie. You know what I mean, Leigh?
Yeah.
That you're trying to get rid of some evidence. You throw it in the ocean, the big ocean, not near to the shore. They're way out doing their thing. And is swallowed by a fish. That is caught, and that it is the evidence to incriminate you. Just what the other man needed, because Briggs was going to get away with it. So I thought that was really a precious story, and thought I would share it with everyone. But you know, there are so many lessons that teach us that behind all the age and the color and the culture, we're just humans. And as humans, the stories, you can relate to them whether they were, you know, 200 years ago, last year, last week, but underneath, we're all the same. I mean, people think in similar ways, depending, of course, at the times, because I always am intrigued how the information that is documented about certain things that happened long ago, especially when they're quoting what people said. A lot of times it was in old English, using words to describe certain events or things or scenes that, of course, would not be appropriate now, because I remember there's so many words now that mean different things. So, you know, I find such interesting clues that I can really relate to. As I do this research, I am just mesmerized by all this information. And some of my listeners have said to me that they like the folly story. You remember when we did the folly story, it must have been a couple months ago or last month, that they never heard. Tonight I have a guest in my house who is visiting me, and she's from Portland. She was born and raised in Portland and never heard the folly story. Don't have a clue about it. And it was, you know, the folly thingy was right in Portland. So these articles that are available are just so precious, and I am just so grateful that they are online. And I always tell my listeners, you know, not to be afraid of the internet, because I just embrace it. It's something that can never be destroyed. You know, you can destroy a building, the institute or the library, or so can go down in an earthquake, any disaster, but I don't think that you can destroy cyberspace. Right, Mr. Lay?
Well, you know better. You're the expert on cyber.
No, I'm not the expert at all. But what I mean is...
Right,
that,
I mean,
you know,
these archives are indestructible, apparently.
Oh, yes. And the Gleaner Company is doing a good job to getting as much of the old information that perhaps are written to online, you know, so that it will be there forever. But I would want to make a comment that I believe that there's some of these lessons would be just so good if the current students that are, you know, learning about history would know about some of these lessons of this, in this one, being honest and truthful. And sometimes you try to hide things, and in some strange way, the truth comes out.
Yeah, well, it's the moral of the story that they should be interested in, and, you know, take something from it.
Right. But I am saying that I don't know, and if any of the listeners on the board know, if any of these stories that are now being, you know, brought to us, especially through Pieces of the Past, through the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, if any of that is being taught in the schools in terms of history, in terms of Jamaican history. I am just curious to know that. Leigh, do you have any idea?
No idea, but I would suspect if we didn't get a little more out of history, Jamaican history, in our time, I would doubt that the people of today get any more than we would get, you know? So
Well, on the contrary, I am thinking that because we were brought up under the British rule, and in those days you learned more about, you know, things that related to Britain and not necessarily Jamaica itself, that hopefully if they would make a curriculum that includes that, some of this.
Well, you know, it's possible. That's an angle.
Yeah,
but,
because I think the more you know about these things, at some of the stories we did, I know that I have friends with children who graduated from Howard, and they never knew that under Theodore Roosevelt, Jamaicans were received in the White House. They didn't have a clue. They did not have a clue. And I believe that the more pride you have about your past, you know, there are lots of things that you're not proud of, but the things that you can be proud of builds self-esteem. And that is why I'm hoping that somehow some of these stories, just having them live, although they're online and people have access to them, a lot of times people don't have time or they're not inclined to. But hopefully they will listen to, or the people who might have people who are interested in history might be able to send, you know, something to them that they would be more fit into their lifestyle now, because people are so busy, although we have so much more things available to us to make life easier, we don't seem to have more time. Wouldn't you agree?
Right.
Although, you know, and you think of in the old days when transportation was different, communication was different, everything was different, it was very hard. And yet people overcame some horrendous things to achieve great things. So my point is that a lot of I think it would be helpful to the young people to learn about some of these things, because it would give them more strength in who they are and where the whole nation, you know, the things that have evolved as it came along to be an independent country. So I am always asking my audience to pass information along to other people, and I am always welcoming friends of Jamaica, Jamaicans, Jamericans, Jabrits, Jacans, whatever, you know, people who are born of Jamaican parentage or one parent or, you know, way down the line, but do have a curiosity or an interest to check out some of the archive shows we have. We have done a variety of shows on different things, from the exotic fruits to discover Jamaica one parish at a time. And at this point, I want to remind our listeners that there is a book out, Portland, the Other Jamaica, that is a chronological history of Portland, which is a marvelous parish. And, you know, we have done a lot of special things about Portland.
Yeah.
And they seem to be quite popular with our listeners, because those shows are getting a lot of hits, like the one about Folly and the one about Errol Flynn and all those guys hanging out there, and the one we did with the author, Ken Roche, of the book. So I think that there are especially families that have grandchildren or children that might not know the Jamaica now. They might not have a chance to go and visit, or even if they do, they might be interested in things of the past, and these two particular books are very good books. I think they're interesting. They're along a storyline, and I quote a lot of things from the history of the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage, which is by Olive Seymour. And, of course, I always love Dr. Joy Lumsden's research. And for those of you who might be listening online or on the board, there's Jam Joy, I think, is it? But if you just Google Dr. Joy Lumsden, she is doing some wonderful research on lots of people and events from way, way, way back. And she pieces her information together. I'm sure it is not as easy as perhaps just writing an article where you have all the facts. So with that said, I am trying to put together for the rest of the month interviewing some senior Jamaicans that perhaps some I'm hoping to interview a couple that are in their 90s who have lived in the same district that they grew up in. And they're both, I hope that next week they'll be on the show. I can't make any promises because I haven't confirmed my interview with them. But, Leigh, can you imagine how cool that is? This couple was born and raised in the district that they live in one of the parishes. They raised their children who are perhaps all abroad, and the couple still lives in the same area. And that's sort of unusual, don't you think?
Oh, yes. I met some people on my travels, older people who live like in Brownstone, one man in particular. I mean, these are friends of mine. They're granduncle and grandaunt and people like those. I won't mention any names. But when you say they live in a house on a property for so many years, comes to mind a couple that I visited a long time ago, where they live, we used to have upstairs, downstairs houses a lot in the country.
Uh-huh.
And to get upstairs, you wonder sometimes if you're going to make it because the banister, the rail
was thin.
Was thin and broken in some cases.
Oh.
And of course, it didn't matter to me then. I just wanted to go up and talk to them. But it's funny, after we're doing these stories and we're rehashing all the good lives that these people lived and how successful they were in their own way, and they were more interested in rearing their children and giving them a good education. This is all I am more appreciative of all of this at this point in time.
Oh, yes, yes,
you
yes.
Know?
And it seems like, I don't know for the rest of the world, but I know that in Jamaica, it didn't really matter the economic situation, because even the people who worked as helpers in those days, I think their number one objective, if they had children, was to give those children an education. That was the most important to them then. I don't know that, it's the same thing now. It seems like there's been a little shift for, some people as to the priorities. Because I personally know of families, and in Jamaica we had the middle class and whatever, but that the people, I know several people who had a helper or perhaps all the children's lives, and they had children who went on to be well educated, go abroad, and are now taking care of their parents if they're still alive, So my point is, the mothers and grandmothers were focused on making sacrifices to overcome whatever the difficulty was economically that they were in. But the number one priority was education. I have left the island so long that I don't know what the general, feeling is. But from what I am reading online and things like that, it seems like, that is not as rooted and riveted in the psyche as it used to be. And, you know, if you don't educate the children, the future is sad. Because it's education, no matter what part of the world, you know, the children are the future. And I'm always an advocate to the seniors to, even though you might not think that the young people are listening, to at least tell your story and do your encouragement and be of service if you can, because it is important. And I believe that in doing so, regardless of whether you think it's falling on deaf ears, as they say, you know, even when you were young, you can remember, you can hear your mother or your grandmother saying something and you're not responding, so they perhaps think that you are not really listening, but you can perhaps remember some of the things that they would be saying to you. Am I not right?
Yeah.
I can remember, even though I might. So when you think it's falling on deaf ears, you know, you might be surprised. So whenever you can, whether you don't have to do it for the appreciation, do it because it's your responsibility. And I believe in doing so, we are leaving a part of us on that person, whether it's a young person, a child, another person. It is very important. And we want to always share the good things. We always want to give encouragement, and we always want to really help in whatever way we can. It's not all the time we have money, and sometimes money is not everything. You know, lending an ear, being a friend, making a suggestion, reaching out in some way, I think is very, very important. And I really want to applaud the groups all over the world that are helping in the diaspora, that are helping to reach out to somebody or some other entity in Jamaica. And I would encourage my listeners to get involved and support in any way they can, the organizations that are helping, you know, in some way to do something to make the life for some child or children a little better. So, Mr. Lay, do you have any other words to close our fish story?
No, I find it very entertaining. As a matter of fact, that fish story. How did you come by that story?
Oh, well, you know, I do a lot of research. I do just glance over, or I do look a lot in the pieces of the past, and I look into the heritage. Just, it's not all the time. It is really that interesting. Some of it is just facts. But I try to, you know, put together something that I believe would be entertaining. I can have my little sidebars. You know how I love that. And I can really relate to it personally, you know what I mean? And it makes a lot of sense. And I am learning so much. I really am. And that always excites me. And I'm hoping that listeners will find it enlightening in some way. And I always like to remind everyone that you can always select a particular show and forward it to someone who you think might have an interest in that particular segment. And, of course, we invite you to go to our website, which is www.backyardlabrish.com, and leave us a comment. If you're listening online, you can leave us a comment right on the Blog Talk web show website, and it will be forwarded to me. And if you have an idea for an interesting story, or you want to tell your story, I invite you. This is an open forum. We try to stay away from politics and religion and, you know, all of that stuff, because, again, we're here to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And even though a lot of us may not be planning to return, we still want to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. So, with that said, I want to thank my listeners for staying through the show. I see them Skyping in and coming in from different parts. And for those of you who may come by later and listen as you're checking your email or whatever, you can always leave us a comment on the website. But we thank you for listening, and we hope you'll be back next week, because we're going to have another Labrish, and it's going to be interesting and fun. I don't know about you, Leigh, but I always have a lot of fun.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So with that said, I'm going to do my famous line, which is, make it a great week. Bye.
Bye.
See you next week.